instruction is, if we're still employing them, that you give it back to them and let
give it back to them and let them do what
let them recount it. Is that the sense of this body? Is there anyone that understands some other sense by this?
None.
Okay. I'm going to take. We need to move to the next agenda item. I'm going to take 3 more minutes.
A point of information, please.
Yes. Point of order. Yes, point of order. Point of order. I'm sorry. The envelope was not sealed. The envelope was not sealed, but I do have it in my possession. It's not sealed.
I hope you sealed it.
Point of information?
Yes.
Is it possible then to ask Fairvote to validate the condition of the ballots by simply retabulating them as if as they were done the first time, just to make sure they came out the same so that the votes have not been touched, and then redo it without the...
Does everyone understand Carolyn's suggestion? It is possible to do that. It isn't exactly a point of information, but... Okay, so Jim, that's what will be done.
Yes.
I saw Rico and Bonnie, and please take... no more than a minute apiece. We're really off the agenda.
I just wanted to say to Campbell Johnson that I hope that what has happened today won't push him away from running again. This was a hard vote for me, and listening to his qualifications, I really think he could be an asset. Would be an asset to the board. But we had a similar situation over here that did set a precedent at KPFK, where we had a great candidate that was disqualified simply because he thought that he had paid his $25 due when he hadn't paid his $25 due, and he got the most votes, and he was not seated. It was a hard one for me then, and it's a hard one for me now, and I hope Campbell will run again in the future.
Bonnie?
Yeah, I will just take a minute. I'm still really concerned about the fact that we are considering doing a retally. And what I'd like to do is just read you a quote from Brian Edwards Tiekert, who is far better at analyzing this voting stuff than me, the disc jockey. The bylaws stipulate that in the case of a vacancy on the PNB, the LSB involved has to have an election to fill the vacancy. I believe what he was quoting is Section 8, filling vacancies on the board. The bylaws say vacancies get filled by a local election, not a retally. The WPFW-LSB might have nominated different candidates and voted differently if it knew the PNB would choose to interpret the bylaws in this fashion.
Exactly.
Using an STV retally presents procedural problems. It is mathematically possible, for instance, that the elimination of one candidate from the tally could, in the recount, unseat someone already elected. it concerns me that we're twisting and turning a bit here.
Bonnie, I hear what you say. The vote's been made. The precedent was set at KPFK, and I think we need to move on.
Not to do a retally.
So, we're back on our agenda. Now, the item on the agenda, as it was stated, was to do a training, and I believe the trainer is here. Unless I hear something to the contrary.
Just a quick question.
Sean?
Is there a copy of the agenda? I haven't seen one yet.
I have only an email version. Carolyn?
Is it possible to, several listeners have asked me to do any public comment now. I know we're not in a real meeting yet, and we don't have to at all. But
how much time have we got? We're here till 5, is that right?
Thank you.
2.5 hours. Okay. Where is the trainer?
Right there, Casey.
Yes. Casey, thank you for coming. Thanks for being willing to do this. We have to split the time up somehow. Well, I guess we don't have to. Dan, how much time do you feel you need?
45 minutes to an hour.
45 minutes to an hour. That gives us an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes. For Casey, will that work for you?
Sure.
Okay. So we'll make it an hour and a half. We'll extend for 15 minutes if we need to. And Casey, take it away.
Am I taking minutes for this?
I don't think so. There's no action going to be taken, so I don't think we need the minutes. And this is an open
it's
meeting.
Open.
Yes.
Open. Chair.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Rico, yes?
Are we going to have any listener comment?
Oh, yes, that was a request.
There's public comment in the evening.
We have public comment in the evening, and we've crimped the time of someone we've invited down to do this for us. And I would not like to do any more of that. So
and
I,
it wasn't on the agenda.
Unless there's a motion from the board contrary to change the agenda, which would require 2/3, I'm going to go ahead with the training.
There is no agenda.
Good point. Good point.
Sure doesn't take
no, we're not taking listener comments. Casey?
Hi, everyone. I'm Casey McFall. I believe that my office made, I think it's 30 or 35 copies of everything. So whatever extras you have, if you can share them with the audience. And audience folks, if you could, if there aren't enough, please share them. So first off, I want to apologize. I think we had a mix-up on the start time, and I was panicking after Wendy called me to get here because I actually thought we were starting right around 1, and I was going to get here between 12:30 and 12:45, but it looks like it didn't matter. So
it worked out.
It worked out. One of the things that we're going to talk about, though, is different ways that you might be able to make better use of board time. And
I will. Beer first.
Yes. I'll just say to start out that I sat here in the back of the room, and the one question that came to my mind about a minute ago, when I figured out what was going on, was how this actually connects to putting out good radio. And I think that that's something I'd like y'all to think about each time you start to talk about something and go into an argument like this. Does everybody have a list what we're going to talk about? Everybody got those? Well, let me start out by telling you a little bit about myself. I am a principal in two different organizations. The first is Milestone Consulting. We do consulting to nonprofit organizations, mostly in California, but we do work with some international organizations and some national organizations as well. We have programs in Afghanistan, and we have programs in Chad working with refugees. Mostly we do a lot of training, a lot of board development, but mostly program development. I'm wondering right now if people feel like they need a break, because it looks like I'm talking to about half of you. You need a bathroom break?
If you're feeling that, and I think you're right, that there's not enough, we need to honor your presence and provide attention for you. So I'm going to declare a 5-minute recess.
Okay. All right.
Back in 5 minutes, which will make it 20 minutes to 3. So please take your seats. Would someone...
are you going to call people in? Yep.
Great.
She looked like she was on that mission.
So where do we go? Starting from when we have a quorum.
I'm easy. Whatever.
We do have a quorum. It's your preference. Do you want to wait until a few more members come, or do you want to?
It's your preference.
I think.
All right. Let's
I think we begin.
All right. Good.
Begin.
So. Milestone Consulting is my organization. Our mission is to provide individuals and organizations with the tools to build better communities, better organizations, and stronger lives. We do a lot of training. We do a lot of grant writing, and we do program development and program operations. For some organizations, we actually go into their organization and operate programs for them. And for others, we just help set up their programs and then give them the tools they need to operate them. We also have a nonprofit arm of our organization that's called Campaign for Social Justice. And in that organization, we do direct service, mainly aimed at underrepresented low-income communities. Although we do work with large organizations, as I said, nationally and internationally, I would say that 85 to 90% of the organizations we work with are grassroots ethnic organizations, mostly in the California, state of California, but also in other places. We contract with about 80% of the refugee-serving organizations in California and advocate for better services for non-English-speaking people. So I was asked to come and kind of give you basic overview of board responsibilities under the assumption that a lot of people are brand new on the board, and I realize that some of you are not. So we'll just kind of have to, you know, if you're at a different level, just kind of bear with us. But really what I'm going to do is talk about real basic duties and responsibilities of a board of organization, a board of directors. And I'm asking that you please consider these basic duties and how your actions and the things that you discuss and put on your agenda reflect your duties and your responsibilities, and whether or not the things that you're spending time talking about are in the best interests of the organization, whether they directly impact the main purpose of your organization, and whether they contribute to an atmosphere that is conducive to moving the organization along rather than keeping it where it is or going backwards. Quite honestly, you guys can Robert's rules yourself into oblivion if you want, and you know, people like me can come and talk to you over and over and over again. But the truth of it is that you're at a point now, I understand, I just found out when I got here that you don't really have even an executive director at this point. You're at the point now where you've got to move beyond this stuff and start figuring out, as a board member, what are my responsibilities to this organization and to the listeners? Not what are my responsibilities to the board, although that's somewhat plays into it. Not what are my responsibilities to my particular station. Although you're here representing your station, you are here now overseeing a national corporation, and you need to think about what it is that you're doing and talking about and how what you do and how you relate to your other board members moves those things along. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is just the basic duties of boards of directors. Is it best to just pass from one direction, I guess, or not? Here. Can you pass
Put
these?
Put them in half. Half and half.
And again, please, if there are extras, share them with the audience. All right, so you have two handouts that are duties of a board of directors. And always keep in mind that, you know, these are basics and things change depending upon the size of your organization, the situation your organization may be in, the type of organization you have, and these should be used as a guideline. Everything we say today should be used as guidelines depending upon the specific circumstances of your organization. But basically, regardless of what type of organization you have or where you are, all members of corporate boards have basic fiduciary responsibilities to the organization, and you're expected to make a good faith effort to maintain those duties. Good faith action is acting truthfully and honestly with the best intentions to benefit the organization. To benefit the organization. Acting in good faith means being knowledgeable about the organization's mission, plans, and policies, and ensuring that they meet the needs of the community that you represent. You may have different interpretations of the mission, but it's your responsibility to know basically what the mission is. You are responsible for being fully prepared for and participating in board meetings, in the deliberations and decisions that are made at those meetings. That means that in order to do that, somebody has to take responsibility for getting information, board packets, and things out on time for board members to be able to read them ahead of time, to know what's going to be deliberated, and to be prepared when you get here so that you're not spending time trying to figure out what it is you're talking about or who's doing what. Now, I understand that, you know, when you're short of staff, that means that someone on your board is going to have to take responsibility for that, but somebody's got to get information out to people on time to be able to be prepared. You're responsible for reading, evaluating, and ensuring the accuracy of all reports. That includes minutes, financial reports, evaluations, and knowing what they say before you discuss them. You're responsible for ensuring that the organization has sufficient resources, including financial resources, human resources, other assets. That's a board's responsibility. I have never, in 25 years of working in nonprofits, seen a board of directors that is not responsible for fundraising. I'll say that again. I have never, in 25 years of working in nonprofit, seen a board of directors not responsible for fundraising. It is your responsibility to make sure that there are assets available to your organization. Now, again, assets may be people. It may be volunteers. It may be in-kind donations. It may be connecting with other organizations who can share things with you so that you can form partnerships and that you can both move forward with whatever your missions are. But you are responsible for making that happen. A board of directors is responsible for ensuring that all nonprofit activities are in accordance with your mission, your policies, and that they are in accordance with the rules and regulations of the society and the community. Okay, so, you know, that basically, don't break the law, be honest, be fair, be a Boy Scout, Girl Scout. Yeah, Girl Scouts are better, actually. Okay, you're responsible for continuously considering and focusing on the priorities of the organization, and not on those of yourself, another organization, or any subset of an organization. This is basic nonprofit management and governance expectation. Your organization and the best interests of the organization come first. You're responsible for sharing your ideas and opinions and advice to forward the progress of the organization, and for representing the organization in a favorable light to the community. That means that when you talk about your organization in public, you speak of it well, you promote it, you look for ways to bring additional resources in and partnerships in. It means also that you don't speak poorly of the organization or people in it or people who work for it in private or in public, or in writing, or on the internet. You have a fiduciary responsibility to represent this organization in a good light. And the people of this organization are the organization. It's your responsibility to reflect on this well. Those are kind of things that you have to think about that have to do with how you act and how you behave. But there are also some basic tasks that boards are responsible for. You're responsible for determining your mission and your purpose. And missions need to be reviewed and revised if needed. When I do organizational mission development, I always tell people that the best mission statement I ever saw was the Star Trek one, because they revised it and they went forward, you know, and you should really look at your mission statement maybe every 5 years ago and see whether it still fits, whether it's still appropriate. But remember, the Star Trek mission used to be where no man has gone before. They changed it to where no person has gone before. They updated it. They revised it. So I always use that kind of as an example, and I do like a whole hour on that. But it's really important to take a look at that mission statement and figure out whether it represents where you are now and where you want to go. You're responsible for selecting the chief executive. The chief executive should be the person to whom all administrative duties are assigned. You're responsible for reviewing and evaluating that person's performance regularly, specific to the job description, and to keep that evaluation kind of in sync with any planning that you've given. So in other words, if you're doing forward planning for your organization, you need to take those plans, those strategies that you've developed, and incorporate them into goals and objectives for your chief executive. And that's what you would use to evaluate an executive, is how well they met the goals and objectives that you've assigned to them from evaluation period to evaluation period. You're responsible for supporting the chief executive. That includes following through on commitments to the organization and providing an environment in which the executive can utilize his or her skills without interference and constant criticism. A board's responsibility is to provide a work environment in which all of your employees can be as successful as possible. And in order to be as successful as possible, your employees have to feel supported. They have to feel that if they have questions or problems or they need resources, that their board members are there for them to turn to. That's your job as a board. You are responsible for governing the organization through broad policies and objectives. And you'll notice that on this sheet, on number 4, broad is underlined. Good policies and objectives are developed and agreed upon with the chief executive and employees. Board duties can include assigning priorities to goals and objectives and ensuring your capacity to carry out programs by continuously reviewing the work. So in other words, a broad policy might be that, I don't know, Pacifica has a policy that all stations will hear once a month something about the governance activities of the organization. I'm making this up as we go along. That's your broad policy. It's up to the people that you pay and employ to figure out how that happens. It's up to them to take what your general goals are and go back and meet with their staff and figure out how they're going to make those happen. It's not your job to go in and say, no, I don't think that you should do it this way, or I don't think These are the appropriate people to put on the staff. You pay somebody to do that. When you have an executive director, you pay that person to make those decisions. Conversely, a good chief executive will immediately, after a board meeting, take whatever motions were passed by a board, whatever directives were given, will go back, meet with staff, and immediately figure out how to implement those. It's a two-way street. So that you are giving your executive a broad guideline on what you want to happen, and that person is responsible for going back and making it happen, and then coming back and reporting to you the next time on the things that you instructed them to do and how it is they're going about doing them. You're responsible for acquiring sufficient resources for the operations, for accounting to the public for the product and services of the organization. This is especially true for expenditures and conformance to rules and laws especially to provide financial statements, fiscal accountability, approving the budget, policies that have to do with contracts, and just letting people know that are donating what their money is going for. And you're responsible for accepting responsibility for all of the policies that you've set forth. Managing your resources effectively, and remember, your time is a resource. Your time is a very valuable resource to this organization. When you don't manage your time correctly, when you take up 4 or 5 hours on an agenda, you are using your listeners' resources. You're responsible for ensuring effective organizational planning. That means having a strategic plan. That means that strategic plan should come along with action plans, who's responsible, what those timelines are, how they're going to get implemented, how they're going to report back, how you're going to evaluate them. Those are all pieces of a strategic plan that you are responsible for trying to make sure that you have and that you follow. You want to determine and monitor your organization's programs and services. I guess that for Pacifica, that would be trying to figure out, or excuse me, instructing staff to come back to you with a method for figuring out how to evaluate programming. You might want to give guidelines on what it is you would like to be evaluated and have them come back to you and tell you how those things might happen. Again, enhancing the public image. Also, typically a board of directors serves as a court of appeal. And what I mean by that is most often a board of directors is kind of the final say in, say, a grievance matter or a public complaint policy. Now, of course, you have to take into account things like union contracts, all of those kinds of things. But typically most programs have a grievance policy and a complaint policy that has progressive levels. You know, if you don't agree with the decision, then you go to the manager, blah, blah, blah. Typically, a board of directors is the final say in any type of complaint appeal. And you're responsible for assessing your own performance. And I'm going to give you at the end just a really quick tool that you can take with you and use to assess that performance and maybe figure out where you might be falling short and where you might need to pay a little more attention or figure out how you might want to tweak the way you do some things. Okay? You sounded like Beavis and Butthead. Okay, so what I want to talk about now is kind of the relationship between the board and staff, and how you have to work with staff and how you might negotiate what kinds of things might happen. So I'm going to pass out, I think, 3 or 4 items. The first one are the expectations that a chief executive... Yes?
I have a request to perhaps be able to ask questions.
Sure.
What you'd like a little while.
That's great.
Where do you want them, that's all? When you're talking about the point we're concerned about, or... would you like them at the end so you're not constantly...
Why don't we do it at the end of each subject? So if you have questions about board responsibilities and fiduciary duties, let's talk about that now.
Casey, let me just... I'll do it.
Thank you.
Is this two or one?
That's one. My name's Casey.
Casey, I'm Lizette. One of the things that I have been very concerned about is a lack of a strategic plan. I think I've homed it at my local station... infinitum. But what I want to know, how does a board go about devising that plan?
There are a lot of tools that are available for you to do a plan, a strategic plan, and we can talk about that kind of at the end as well. But go ahead.
I think what I want to find out, I mean, a board normally is it's comprised of people who have jobs.
Yeah.
And you made a very interesting point when you said that the chief executive, and in this case, 5 cases, there is the station manager. I wondered if it was out of whack to expect that person to bring that proposal, as it were, to formulate the plan and the board or the LSB agrees on it. Let me get to
you. You know, I think that a good strategic plan has to be developed cooperatively with the board and probably higher level staff. You've got to develop it. If you develop a plan, if one person develops a plan and then expects everybody else to kind of go along, you've got to have buy-in and you've got to have ownership. And a good strategic plan means a lot of negotiating. There are pieces of a strategic plan that you'll be able to do on your own. For example, there will be surveys and prioritizing and things that you can all do and have staff do at different levels that might help you identify the basic areas of concern, what your priorities will be, where you think your biggest issues are. Those things can be done on your own. You know, everybody fills them out and sends them in and that kind of stuff. And then there are things that you really should have a facilitator for. While, you know, we often do strategic planning with organizations and get them through a process, my recommendation, in order to not spend a lot of resources that you don't have, is to do a lot of that on your own. You shouldn't be spending, you know, $25,000 on a strategic plan if you don't have an executive director, is my opinion. It's only my opinion, but I say that as somebody who lives off of doing strategic plans for people. I wouldn't, that's my opinion. But I do think that there are times during a strategic planning process that you need somebody to come in and facilitate discussion and help guide you through the steps. In a strategic planning process? Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that probably the board chair can lead the process. And when I say lead the process, what I mean by that is to gather tools, to disseminate the tools, to make sure the responses are coming in, mm-hmm. to help to get people to tally those things, to make sure that there's buy-in from staff, from volunteers, mm-hmm. from that kind of, in that way. But I would say that in most cases, that's up to a board. In a lot of organizations, an ED will start the process. But most healthy organizations have a very good working partnership between your chief executive and your board chair. And so all of those things should be done as a partnership. Sean.
Yeah. I'm just a little bit perplexed here because under our bylaws, it's the board's job to appoint, supervise, and discharge the foundation's executive directors and all of its officers. Well, thank you. And all of its officers. And right here you say representing the nonprofit in a favorable light, which I'm sure we all want to do, but we also have a fiduciary duty to criticize management when it's justified.
You absolutely have a responsibility to criticize and correct management. You would do that in an executive session.
On all issues, even public issues, where you may, where the public, I mean,
when you're when you are criticizing the performance of an employee, that's a personnel matter. When you, if you are questioning, excuse me, just a minute. When you are, if you are questioning a policy.
There you go.
That's a different matter.
There you go.
So when your responsibility, your fiduciary responsibility is to represent the organization in a good light, I would suggest that questioning a policy is done in a matter, in a manner that does not publicly criticize an employee.
Oh, I have no problem with that, but I, from what you put down here, it even sounded like it was wrong to criticize policy that we, as directors, have a fiduciary duty to say, hey, we may not agree with that policy, and we should be able to do that on most issues in public session.
You absolutely should do that in public session. In fact, it would be incorrect not to do it in public session.
Thank you. That's
right.
Which one?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions about that? Okay, so let's talk about board staff relationships. You know, all organizations face issues having to do with how involved board members get in day-to-day operations. Gigantic organizations have this issue. Organizations of 5 or 6 people have this issue. And often that varies depending upon what your particular situation is at the moment. If you've got a big, busy, healthy, growing organization with a lot of staff, then a board needs to step back and let the staff do what they're paid to do. If you are in a situation in which there are day-to-day things that need to be done that are not being done, then the board needs to decide how those things are going to get done, and it may be that you need to negotiate ways that you make sure they get done. Does that make sense? Okay. So the first thing that I passed out was the 8 basic expectations a chief executive has of the board. And I gave you this. I don't think we need to go through it in detail because you don't have a chief executive right now. But I want you to look at this, and I want you to consider when you are at the point of getting another chief executive, how these things are going to play into how you hire, how you represent the organization to potential employees, and how you approach entering into a new relationship with an ED. So I won't talk a lot about it, but I do want to go through very quickly that a chief executive expects of board members a willingness and a commitment to know the organization and the environment in which it operates. They expect regular attendance at meetings. They expect that you are adequately prepared. If somebody works 50, 60 hours a week getting you data and reports and you show up to a meeting and you haven't read them, you know, what does that tell that person about what you think about the work they're doing? They expect full participation. They expect a commitment to teamwork. This is an important thing for a board of directors. If your board is not working as a team, you can't adequately communicate to staff where it is you want the organization to go. You're setting yourselves up for failure, and you have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the organization doesn't fail. A chief executive expects a commitment from the board to speak with one voice. You can't go to mom and have mom tell you yes and then go to dad and dad tell you no. You don't know what to do. And mom and dad don't need their chief executive deciding who they're going to go to in order to get what they need done. You have to speak as one voice. And I know that sitting here now, you know, some of you just rolled your eyes. I saw it. You know, some of you are thinking, well, come on, that's never going to happen. But the fact of the matter is, if you go back and look at those fiduciary duties, if you are fulfilling your fiduciary duties, you will speak with one voice because you will figure out what the best course of action is for the purpose of your organization. So everything you do, everything you talk about, every decision you make, you need to go back and ask yourself that one question. Is this what's in the best organization of, in the best interest of the organization? It's very simple when it really comes down to it. Before you open your mouth, before you write something down, you just ask yourself, is this what's the best thing for this organization? Is what I'm going to do or say going to promote this organization in a way that will help it be strong and stable and completely give out the services that we're here to give? A chief executive expects a collective commitment to improvement. That means you shouldn't be committed to mediocrity. You shouldn't, you know, figure that, well, we got through another board meeting. You need to collectively say, as one voice, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make this better. Next week will be a little bit better. The week after that will be a little bit better. And how am I going to contribute to making that happen? And sincere support for the chief executive. Sincere support. I saw those eyes roll again. No. Listen, this is why I'm saying this, is that I can stand here for an hour, I can give you a day free at no charge, and it can go in one ear and out the next, and I can come to the next board meeting and see you guys arguing again. But seriously, if you do not seriously, honestly consider putting your personal feelings aside for the benefit of the organization, you either need to kiss the organization goodbye or you need to make room for someone who will. I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend you, Sean. I really don't.
I don't think those characterizations are necessary. That's all. Thank
you. All right.
I just want Casey has the floor.
Okay. All right. The next two handouts have to do with how much a board of directors really should be involved in day-to-day operations or involved in management. On the handout that says how much should your nonprofit be involved in management, you'll see that the first, there is a list of four different types of policies. We kind of structure these policies to be kind of your higher level policies all the way down to your day-to-day. Your strategic policies are things that affect the entire organization. That has to do with your mission, your vision, what your overall goals are for the organization, those kinds of things. Those are board decisions. Of course, you take into consideration staff. You work with your chief executive to make those decisions, but those are board decisions. You vote on them and you decide, and those are instructions that you pass down, expectations that you pass to staff, and say, these are things that we expect to happen in this organization. And later on, you evaluate your staff person, your chief executive, on how well they met those expectations. Management policies, functional policies, have to do things like strategic policies, staffing policies, program policies, fundraising evaluations. Typically, those things are policies that are worked out with a board of directors and the staff, the chief executive, together. You need to work on those together, and you need to negotiate where things need to go. You're coming at it from one perspective. A staff person is coming at it from another perspective. And those are things you need to work on together. Program policies have to do with things like how programs operate, maybe how things get on the air, maybe how a fund drive might be operated. Those kinds of things. And those kinds of things really are management policies. Those are not things that the board should step in and say, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to have fund drive in this room or those kinds of things. Those are things that your staff needs to do, and you need to support them in those decisions. And day-to-day policies and procedures, those are things like where people put their time cards or what time they show up to work, those kinds of things you need to stay out of completely. You need to let the people that you pay to make those decisions make those decisions. Day-to-day operational decisions and policies are not your purview. Yes?
Yeah.
Right.
And needs to be managed, you know.
Right.
We don't go into the day-to-day operations, but, you know, we need to... Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know that we need to have some type of structure or a managerial yeah. Guidelines, at least for volunteer staff, and it needs. Yeah. What's your take on that?
Let me start by saying, first of all, that, you know, a few years ago when I was involved in Pacifica, I was always amazed that there were all of these categories. Mm-hmm. There was mm-hmm. board, mm-hmm. then there was management, then there was staff, and there was unpaid staff, and there were all of these, excuse me, crazy ass things. And that's the only way I can describe it. You've got volunteers and you've got staff.
Yeah.
That's it. You guys are volunteers and the person that shows up once a week to answer the phone is a volunteer. You have different responsibilities. You have different, mm-hmm. Different levels of responsibility, but you're all volunteers. And if you have somebody who's paid to clean the offices at night, who's a staff person? That person is a staff person, the same as your chief executive is a staff person. They may have different responsibilities and different levels, but you have volunteers and staff. Now,
our fiduciary responsibilities to the volunteer is very, very.
Most organizations have pretty defined volunteer policies.
Okay.
Your volunteers are probably, you know, when handled correctly, are probably the greatest asset any organization has. And that means that a volunteer policy includes how you track time.
Yeah.
Tracking volunteer time, because volunteer time can be counted as in-kind assets on financial statements. All volunteers, how you orient them. How they are supervised, how they are fired, because volunteers can be fired, how they are managed and who manages them.
And what their duties are.
And what their duties are. Most organizations have job descriptions for their volunteers. Mm-hmm. A comprehensive volunteer policy is an extremely important piece of an organization's operations. Mm-hmm. Now, typically, I would say that, you know, you would ask your chief executive to put together a volunteer policy and bring it to the board for review and approval. Mm-hmm. Now, the chief executive may decide which staff members need to be involved in that and whether or not they need input from the community or from volunteers. Mm-hmm. But typically, when the board says we need a policy, they go to the staff and they say bring us a policy and they review it.
Mm-hmm.
They may approve it. They may send it back for other changes. But you need to consider liability that goes
insurance.
Along with volunteers,
yes.
volunteer insurance,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not just liability for what the volunteer may do or say,
mm-hmm.
but for what the organization may do or say to a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Recognition? Absolutely. There are three R's to volunteer management. Recruitment,
mm-hmm.
what are your methods for recruiting volunteers? What are your processes for bringing in people and placing them into good positions that are appropriate for them?
Retention.
How do you keep your volunteers? What do you do to keep them happy, to keep them contributing, mm-hmm. to keep them going? Mm-hmm. And recognition. And a good volunteer program will always have resources available for volunteer recognition. A good volunteer program will have professional volunteer coordinators. And volunteer coordination is indeed a profession. There are people who are well-trained professional volunteer coordinators who can help
exactly.
you with that. Our company actually has two curricula that we've written on volunteer management, and we'd be happy to just give you one of them if that helps.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Nia.
Yeah. Hi, Casey. Thank you so much for this training.
Sure.
I said earlier, you should have been here earlier. I mean, people chuckled, but I really meant it. Because if you had seen the beginning of this meeting, that's why you should have been here first, right?
So
now,
we're moving forward.
That's right, sister. Okay, we're moving forward. But I just wanted, you know, I'd like to deal with reality. But on a serious note, what if you have a board member who is determined to disrupt meetings? What do you do with that person? You can't, the person's not going to step down.
Mm-hmm.